Welcome to the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast, your best source for information, news, tips, and tricks to get you off the ground running and earn success with your custom apparel decorating business. So get ready to soak up some knowledge. Now, here are your hosts, Mark and Mark.
Okay, hey everyone, welcome back to the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast. My name is Mark Stevenson.
And I'm Mark Vila, and today we're here with Jennifer Cox, the president and co-founder of the NNEP, and an embroiderer herself.
Yeah, an embroidery addict, as she says. And NNEP, by the way, is a national network of embroidery professionals. And why don't we start off, Jennifer, by you just telling us what that is.
Well, hi, everybody. Thanks for having me on the podcast. It's always fun to connect with a group of people that I might not have run into yet, so thank you for the invitation. Mm-hmm. NNEP is the National Network of Embroidery Professionals. And basically, when we owned our embroidery business, I had dreams, aspirations of owning a really big million-dollar embroidery business, except I was a small family business that my mom owned a yarn shop, and then they were a needlepoint, cross-stitch, needle arts boutique in the hometown that I grew up in. They had a storefront in downtown, you know, Main Street, USA. And right. They saw the commercial embroidery machine and thought, oh, cool, what a neat complement, a high-tech aspect to my low-tech store. So they brought in one single needle commercial machine, because that's what they offered back in the 80s.
Right.
It was a full-size commercial machine, but it only had the one color option at a time. So they ran that machine at night at home, and then they still ran the retail store uptown during the week. And as the business got busier and busier, they asked me if I'd come and join the business, because clearly there was significant potential here. And eventually they conned me, or I mean convinced me, coming home and leaving the life, my professional life that I had started, coming back home, moving into my childhood bedroom, and taking on the embroidery side of the company. And I did. It was an interesting adventure. One of the first orders that they had that was a real, you know, for money order was for a very high up community member who liked to take his friends traveling worldwide. And he had them do 125 golf shirts, hats, tote bags, and towels with a 14 color design. Did I mention this was a single needle?
Wow. And that was their first big commercial order?
This was their first contract big order.
Jesus. How long did that take you to do?
Oh, my goodness. It had to have taken them a month and a half. And this, this guy is, I mean, he is such that he owns his own bank in town because he got tired of the other banks and decided that wasn't good enough. So he started his own.
Okay. I just have to ask you, is he the sheriff and the judge too?
No, he's just.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like a situation where the customers talk about when they get that first order and they're up all night every day trying to fulfill and meet a deadline that they did not, that they expected it to be much easier.
Absolutely.
Very much so. So and remember, they still had a retail store to run.
Right.
And the machine wasn't there. So that was the impetus of kind of convincing me there was real potential here. So I came home and joined the business, took on the sales, quickly realized that we needed more sewing power, so we added equipment, we moved the machines up to the retail store, we bought out the space in the business next to us, blew out the wall, built in an embroidery area, you know, just continued to expand and expand, finally sold off the retail and went for full commercial production, just, you know, a manufacturing type arrangement, no more retail. And I went and did outside sales for everybody and for the company. And then we moved to a bigger location, added more multi-head machines, added staff, more staff. And at that point, we looked around and said, how do we get to that million-dollar business? Because I'd been exponentially growing successfully. And all of a sudden, we hit a plateau. And I realized there was a lot of stuff I didn't know about running a good-sized company. I was, you know, we were doing fine at the level we were at, but there were things I obviously didn't know in order to take us to the next level.
Right.
So I called on, you know, a dozen or two business owners that were running million-dollar businesses. I literally drove to their businesses and bought them lunch or dinner and said, hey, what do you know that I don't, and will you teach me? Will you be my mentor? And a bunch of them looked at me and said, oh, that's funny. Now go away. And so it was an interesting learning process that if I was going to figure it out, I was going to have to figure it out on my own except I'm a collaborator by nature. So I kind of said, well, there's a lot of people who know a lot more than I do. Maybe collectively we can figure this out. And that is actually what led to the start of the NNEP, was me and my business partners, Susan and Arch Ritchie, saying, you know what, there's a lot of embroiderers here in Northeast Ohio. Why don't we all come together and see how we can work together rather than compete? So we had an event in Northeast Ohio in June of 1996. So we're just coming up on our 20th anniversary now of serving embroidery business owners. And we thought, you know what, collective buying power, we could work with manufacturers and suppliers and try to negotiate a better deal as a collective group.
Right.
We could help each other. If I hate doing hats and you love doing hats, why am I struggling and why aren't you doing them? If I am a screen printer and I, you know, I know how to screen print, but I really don't like embroidery, why don't we connect? Why don't we swap each other's production and still sell our customers? So all of that kind of spun into what is now the NNEP, which is designed to help embroidery business owners move forward, achieve success, make their dream businesses come to life without having to reinvent the wheel, and by leveraging the buying power of all of us.
That's awesome. And, you know, I mean, just so everybody knows, Coleman and Company and the Coleman family has been associated with NNEP for, you know, since the beginning, for about a decade, just about. So, I mean, we, you know, we most of our customers are members, you know, at one time or another. So it is a great thing to participate in. But, you know, I didn't know your story about the way you started, Jennifer. So that's kind of cool. You were still doing all this in a small town?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Okay.
Well, to me, like, what's great about your story and where you went with it was I just see a couple things in there. I mean, for one is we have customers. I mean, and there's plenty of people listening here and in the business that have big dreams too. You know, plenty of people just want to be in their house and keep it small and quaint.
Right, right.
And that's perfectly respectable. And they want to earn their living and have it quiet. And others have big dreams. And I think the two lessons that anybody needs to take out of it is, one, if you have the big dream, you just got to keep going for it and thinking
right.
about how you're going to do it. And then the other is how you have to learn, you know, do your best to try to learn from others. You know, look at what other people are doing, people that aren't necessarily in our industry even, and make an attempt to learn from them. And if they're not going to teach you themselves, go out and try to learn on your own. But, you know, you have to be humble enough to realize, like, I don't know how to do everything.
Right.
I got to learn a lot on my own. And if I want to have, you know, $1 million business, that's what it's going to take.
So, and I especially like that fact that, like what happens with most people is, just like you, you started out with kind of like, or your parents did, with, you know, the idea and the machine, and then worked on the marketing. You know what I mean? You learned, like, how to do the business afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the things that actually we go through in the podcast a lot is the basic business of getting things done.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And that was one of the biggest learning curves for us, was to figure out, okay, I'm good at sales. Susan was incredibly good at production and management. Arch provided the financial structure stability of, you know, running the books and the banking and keeping the whole system stable. I was out spinning my wheels selling. Mom was keeping the machine going, and the machine being all the schedules and the production flow and the machines and the operators and everything else. So as a single person doing it, it's really hard to do all that and still, you know, sleep at night. So
you've got to look for, you have to in any business, but especially in this, you have to figure what's going to be my strengths.
Yeah.
How can I,
absolutely,
you know, and how can I utilize that? And then beyond that is if you want to do better in other things, if you want to grow, then you've probably got to get some other people involved. And that might not mean that you have to have somebody else own your business. It might not even mean that you have to have an employee. But as you mentioned with the NNEP and kind of the birth of that a little bit is that reaching out to some other businesses and saying, listen, I'm not good at doing this particularly, but I can sell it. And right. if you can do it for me, then we can both make a little bit of money. And by the way, you know, how can I reciprocate that in another way to you? You know, and that's true of even, you know, of any embroidery professionals I can work together.
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the keys I found in working with embroidery businesses, startups and regular businesses, ongoing businesses, is that success often comes when you accept and embrace the fact that you do not have to do everything yourself. And whether that's your bookkeeping and your taxes, would I do my taxes? I would be a fool because the government's going to get a lot more of my money than they should.
Right.
Of course, we use an accountant. Why wouldn't you use that same logic as it relates to your embroidery business? So, you know, do you have to do all your digitizing when you're brand new? Do you want to? Sure, the inclination is there. But is it practical? Not generally. If you want to learn to be a good embroiderer, master the process of being an efficient, proficient, top-level embroiderer, then go back and build in the skills, layer in the skills for being a top-notch digitizer. But you don't do both at the beginning without really slowing down the learning curve.
Right. So, and excuse me, that's a great point. And I just did a telephone interview for one of our in-business success stories mm-hmm. with JMH Graphic in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And they are in a kind of a smallish town. It's about 50,000 people in the town.
Mm-hmm.
And they went from $250,000 the first year to $1.5 million last year.
And you hear people all along say, "Oh, I live in a really small town. My town."
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing they did is the first thing they did was they started selling the end result without having any equipment at all. So they would sell printed T-shirts and embroidery services without having any equipment. They would farm all that stuff out.
Yep.
And then they bought a single head embroidery machine and a direct to garment printer, and they did that for a while until they built up enough business to go with the big multi heads, you know, really like do hats and do corporate work and things along those lines. So, it's a good and it's a repeatable story.
Mm. And you know what is quite interesting is that, I mean, both their story and Jennifer's story here and all the other ones that I've, you know, heard and listened to over the years is it just shows that there's not one recipe, because people ask, well, should I start selling it and then get a machine and learn it? Or should right. I get a machine, learn how to do it and start selling it?
Right.
And it's like, and honestly, you have to do what you're more passionate about first. So if you find the artwork of the embroidery fascinating and you think it's really cool, like, well, dive in there
right.
and learn that art and do that in the time that you have to do it. And then learn to be a business professional now that you're the artist. Or you could do it the other way around. And you could just start selling the stuff, learn about the business, and outsource it. And both of them can turn into be really successful. So a lot of people have asked that when I would sell machines. Well, maybe I should start doing this first or that first. And I say, you just got to do what you want first.
Right.
Because if you're doing what you hate first,
you're
going to give up.
Yeah, true.
You have Very to accept true. You can't do it all. So dive in where you're most – you know, likely to really dive in, you know, both feet all in and go for it. Because nobody runs a successful business half-assed, part way.
Right.
You know?
Nobody. No, you were right the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
You were right the first time.
Well, what's interesting succeed. Is, like, I consider it when you go to if you go to the doctor and you're saying, oh, my stomach is not feeling right, I'm getting nauseous. What they're not going to do is say, here's six medicines, take all six.
Right.
And we'll see if you feel better.
Right.
Because they don't know which one worked. And it's the same thing with, as you mentioned, learning to be an embroiderer or learning to run a business is that if you try to digitize and market and sell and embroider and it's not working, then, well, it's like, do I have bad digitizing? Is my machine not running right? Do I not know how to run the machine?
Yeah,
and right. I promise my customers back. Things I can't do. You know, you're not going to know all of that in one shot.
Yeah.
You have to give yourself time to develop, layer on the skills and the knowledge in order at the end of the day, week, year to say, wow, I started here at zero, knowing nothing, doing nothing, earning nothing. And now I'm here 365 days later and I know how to, I have earned and I have accomplished. And
yeah.
Give yourself time to achieve that growth of skill.
And that's great.
And there's only one way to do that, and that is to have the patience to give yourself that time. So you have to have a commitment and a defined goal that you know, I have a plan of I want to get to this point, and here's how I am going to do that, whether it's, you know, 4 hours a day, 10 hours a week, every Saturday, you know, full in, all on, every day, all day. It has to work for you, for your quality of life, and you have to have a goal to where you're trying to get. It's like getting in the car and saying, I'm going to go visit that shop in Mississippi, except I never picked up a map. Well, right. It's going to be pretty darn tricky to get there, isn't it? So you have to have a defined goal, and then you have to have a plan that moves you towards that goal, whether it's, you know, learn how to do applique, learn how to do hats, learn how to digitize a cap design properly, learn how to, you know, make great sales calls. What do you take on a sales call? How do you talk at a sales call? All those different pieces, but they don't all just magically appear in your brain. You have to, okay, this week I'm going to work on this, or this month I'm going to master that, or, you know, I'm going to get a website page, whether it's, you know, just a basic Facebook free page, business page, or whether I'm going to actually go and pay somebody or do it myself, or whatever. But if right. you don't know what your plan is, how do you expect to accomplish it at the end of the year looking back, because you had no definitive point to which you were trying to reach?
Well, I mean, first of all, Jennifer, you said sales call more than once. So yes. Half of our customers, just like, they started drinking immediately.
That's the secret.
They're quivering because when I talk to people, that's exactly what they don't want to do, is they don't want to go talk to people.
Well, here's the thing. I've come to this conclusion, and I've shared this in many of the presentations and articles that we've written over the years. It seems like we're either born as salespeople or producers. You're either a seller or a maker.
Okay.
And the makers go, oh, no, now I have to sell. And the sellers go, oh, no, now I have to make it.
Right.
So it would seem that in a perfect world, you're either bipolar or you partner with somebody or some system like the internet to take on the part that is scary to you. And for many, many people, that is sales. Right. Me, I see it as a big puzzle. And they have a challenge. The, you know, John Q customer, business owner, and I'll use a plumbing customer that we had for a decade. It was called Norhio Plumbing. They're here in Northeast Ohio. They're still in business, family business. I knew the son. He was my age. They were having a hard time gaining market share. You know, you look in the phone book and there's 50 plumbers. And he's like, how do I stand out? We did embroidered toilet paper for him. Yes, here I am talking about my
toilet paper.
But he left on the back of the facilities at every plumbing job a little roll of toilet paper with his logo on it, and, you know, a card that said, "Hey, thanks for using us. Call us when you need more plumbing."
That's great.
So
that is
we
great.
Were literally going to our local grocer and buying cases of individually wrapped toilet paper, and the coolest thing is, I have to tell you, when you screw up an order. All you do is pop off that little 4-inch square and start over. You have no loss.
Oh, man, that is great.
But we took his product, wrapped it in a cellophane bag, put curly ribbon on it, attached his card to it, and guess what? All of a sudden around here, when he went on a plumbing job, that homeowner came home and found this left on the kitchen counter in the bathroom there. They showed every single neighbor they saw for the next month. You won't believe this. You got to hire this plumber.
Oh, that is a great idea.
They tripled their business simply because we solved his problem of being invisible, not unique among his plumbing competitors.
So I really like that whole idea, and, you know, because everyone, you know, all of our customers are always looking for, you know, a niche market, you know, something that they can do to stand out or to get in with their local community.
Yep.
And what you just described is getting to know your customers so well that you end up providing a solution instead of just a shirt.
Exactly. And that's the business that takes off. When you look at it, not as I have to sell my stuff, but when you come at it from the frame of reference of how can I help my customer achieve their goal? It's not about you. It's about them. And once you flip-flop that in your head and look at your business, I worked with my local home builders association here in Summit County where I grew up for 10 years. I'm an embroiderer. I'm serving as the membership chairperson of the local home builders association because guess what? There's 800 contractors who need shirts, hats, jackets, Carhartts, tool belts, tool bags, logos for their trucks, screen printed shirts for their guys on the job, embroidered nice dress shirts for when they're meeting with clients, gifts for those homeowners when they buy that new home or do that renovation. It was a money pit.
That's awesome. And that's not even a selling situation. All you're doing is serving the community and having your business card available.
I was part of the group. I showed up at every month rubber chicken dinner. I served on a committee. I helped run the parade of homes. I knew every single one of those business owners over the course of my 10 years.
That's awesome.
And one of the key things about HBA, and this is nationwide, one of their core tenets of membership is do business with a member. Okay. Was there another embroidery member? Nope.
Right. So that's great. And, you know, actually the last podcast that we did was on, you know, social marketing, not social media marketing, about getting out and joining those organizations and participating in groups.
Yeah. This is just for anybody who might not have listened to that last one, but this brings up that point again, that one of the best things you can do for your business is join and be active with anything that's local. You don't have to necessarily be, you know, full on into it and be a board member and things like that, but go to some meetings, you know, whether it's luncheon meetings for small business owners, the SBA, your HOA, you know, little leagues, anything that you can do where there's going to be other adults around that you can meet with and talk with and, you know, we use the word network, that you're going to network with them. But really, all that means is you're talking to them and you're saying, what do you do?
What was that phrase we get? Active word of mouth.
Yeah,
You know, when you're out there and you're meeting people, then, you know, you're – because, Jennifer, one of the things that we said the other day was that, you know, we'll do a live seminar and 70% of the people will raise their hand, or 90% even, when we ask them, you know, do you get most of your business through word of mouth?
Yep.
You know, the answer is always yes.
Yeah, that is the main machine that drives our industry.
So break it down for us a little bit, Jennifer. What you know, so you're an embroidery professional listening to this podcast right now. You're just thinking about getting a commercial machine and getting into the business. You know, what would you say that somebody in that situation, you know, should have or should do to get started?
All right. First of all, as I already said, I think you have to have a defined goal of what you want to accomplish in the next 12 months. Okay. Seriously think about it. And me, it was a big, sexy round number. I wrote $1 million and stuck it on a piece of paper right above my computer so that it was part of my consciousness every day. It was stuck on a post-it note on my phone. Because when I was talking to people, customers, I was focused on getting their needs understood so that then I could get what I wanted, which was hitting my goal. So you have to have a clear goal of where you're going and then know what it's going to take to get there. Build out a plan. And if you don't have a business plan, if you don't have an idea of how marketing works, if you just want to stand at your machine and make really cool stuff, it's going to be darn tricky to accomplish that goal unless you go out and learn from other people, attend a trade show, connect with a supplier, you know, join some of the online forums. Pick up those skills or hire those skills through other resources to grow what the pieces you need to make that goal happen. So you have to have a plan to get there and then the time to put into it to make it happen. Because if you don't, it's kind of not fair to yourself. The next thing I suggest people do is look at what I call their BEL, their before embroidery life. And this goes right back to our home builders conversation. You have a whole unique bundle of people, skills, interests, hobbies, passions that you can speak to more so than I ever could. I know the right end of a horse, but beyond that, boy, I cannot tell you anything. But if you're a horse person, you can sell to horse people because you know the language, you know what they need, you know what their interests are. If, you know, I have a niece who's a very active competitive rider, and she's actually in college riding on the college riding team. That's how advanced in horsemanship she is, and she's really good. Well, I can go and watch Megan ride, but do I know anything about what any of these people in those stables have any need for? Absolutely not. I'd look like a fool if I tried to have that conversation.
Right.
But Megan sure as heck could have a heck of an embroidery business, let me tell you, because those folks, one, have money, two, spend it, and three, like to look really good.
Yeah, so that's kind of a natural niche.
Perfect combination right there. The last niche you want to identify is, you know, Cub Scouts, because they're 9 years old and they have no money. So
that's good.
You have to really look at what interests in your life are you personally, you know, the people you like to meet with, connect with online, in person, you know, what magazines do you read, what newsletters do you subscribe to, what websites do you follow, and do those people have disposable income and an ongoing common thread of need? Do they, you know, teachers, they need tote bags. We have a whole bunch of teachers in my family. It seems like they're the best bag people on the planet. They always have gobs of bags with stuff coming out of it to and from school every day. So come up with a really great practical line of tote bags that hold a three-ring binder, that hold all the supplies. And somebody did that, and they've built an entire business out of teacher bags that are better than the normal tote bag.
Nice.
Because she was a teacher, and she was like, you know what, a normal tote bag doesn't meet my need. It doesn't have the right pockets. It's not the right shape.
Yeah.
And so she developed this whole line of bags that is specifically for teachers, and she now sells them nationwide through the internet, through a newsletter, through the Education Association for the Teachers. And
that's awesome.
It's just about identifying something that you care passionately about, and then how do you connect with those people and help them solve their need? Because you know what the need is.
So you've got your goal and a plan on how to get there, and you've got your before embroidery life.
Yep, your belt.
What else are we looking for before we get started?
One of the big things is that how hard do you want to work and know what your lifestyle is? I was on the phone with a gal, gosh, about a week ago. She's retiring at the end of, I think, you know, like May. And she said she's bought an embroidery machine, run it for 2 years. She wants to make $50,000, but she doesn't want to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
How can she do that? And part of me was like, boy, you really are setting yourself up for a disappointment. And the other part of me was either that or she's brilliant. Because,
or she could go into marketing.
She could sell $100 items, or she could sell $3 items. If she sold $100 items, it's possible to do that in 10 hours a week. It truly is.
Right.
But she had nothing more than, I want to make $50,000 and I don't want to work much. And I'm like, well, boy, that's a good gig if you can get it.
Right.
But it doesn't, she had no handles for that, nothing that would actually was logical. So you have to be realistic grasp of what's possible and then how your lifestyle goals and your willingness to do the hours goals are going to make that happen. So when you define that goal, you have to understand that there's parts to that goal that you then have to be able to do the work.
Okay.
And it you know, if you want to earn the big dollars, then you better not be selling $2 can koozies. Because it's just not going to fly. You're going to have to put 100 hours in and make can koozies instead of one varsity jacket.
Right.
To come up.
And so I mean, kind of what you're describing here really are the steps to a good business plan.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it may not be like all the details and the competitive information and all that, but, you know, you've got a goal, you've got, you know, how to get there, you've got your natural niche, kind of picking your market, and then you've got, you know, making your goals realistic and kind of backing that up. See, what do I have to do to get there and make sure it fits what you're willing to do every day?
Yeah, and I think product selection is key. You know, and the whole issue of do I want to work on other people's products and how viable that is for you as a new embroiderer and the risks that come with that, as opposed to do I want to sell the products and do I want to sell high-end products, mid-range products, or low-end products, and how that affects what I can accomplish in the same number of hours. It has to be deliberate. It has to be conscious. If I want to sell hair ribbons, I'm going to make pin money. If I'm going to sell custom car interiors, I'm going to make a little more than pin money.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah, and I think that comes into really where you need to sit down on your computer with a pen and paper when you're thinking about your ideas or what's the next product you're going to bring on is going to be – you know, I think 2 points on it. One is, you know, well, three, if you're counting, the first one's the idea, you know, oh, I think it would be great if I made, you know, these tote bags.
Right.
So next is going to be, well, how many people can I sell it to? And then the third is going to be, you know, what's the scalability of that over time? So how many hours am I going to have to work? How much money can I make per hour? How many product can I make per hour?
Right.
You know, and what's that going to turn into over the course of a 40-hour work week? And then you got to do that from start to finish on all of them. So the tricky part is saying, where am I going to do that? Because it's, you know, I would hear it all the time. Somebody would say, I'm going to make, you know, custom seat covers for these, you know, Harley bikes or these not even Harley ones necessarily, but like the custom made choppers and all these things. I said, well, that's a great idea. How many are you going to be able to sell?
Right.
Right.
You know, how many can you sell those a week or a month? Yeah. And then I would say, well, I'd be able to do, you know, 3 or 4 a week. Okay. And how much money do you want to make?
Right.
Well, I want to make $60,000. You do the math across the board. Are people going to pay that much?
Right.
So you're either going to have to sell more or you're going to have to be willing to make less in that niche.
Or let me just bring up two things. And the first one is there's a huge difference, you know, you can invest in better equipment.
I was just
that will
the same. You can buy more equipment or you can contract it out. One way or the other, you get more sewing power.
Yeah, because the more sewing power is like, for example, you know, the difference between buying a single head 50 needle commercial embroidery machine for, you know, $11,000 or $12,000 or spending $25,000 for a 4 head or a 6 head machine. It's actually a lot more than 4 times the productivity.
Right.
You may do that formula that Mark was just talking about and figure out how many you need to make. You can only make 4, but you're only thinking about using a single head machine. You know, maybe if you're using a multi head, you could now you can make 16.
Exactly.
So that's part of the math.
Yeah. You have to
consider that full scalability of it is all part of the equation. You know, so it's how much can I make? How many hours is it going to take me to make them?
Yeah.
And then at the end, it always kind of has to answer out. The answer should always be how much do I have to charge for these to get that?
Right.
And that's my opinion on it is you have your idea. You have how many you believe you can sell. And then how much money you want to make. And then you just do the math on those three pieces. This is how much I have to charge.
Yeah.
And if it's way out of the market, then you have to adjust something else in that equation to make sure that what you could charge is what people are willing to pay for it. And then that all adds together.
Am I allowed to go on a bit of a rant here?
Oh, man, I was just going to do that. Go ahead. You first and then me.
Okay. First of all, do each of you earn a paycheck?
Yes.
I do, too. Why is it that more than half the embroidery business owners that I know do not take a paycheck? They run their business, they pay their bills, and they say, I made money. When I ask the next question, how much is your paycheck? Much less, are you getting a paycheck? More than half the time, the answer is no. Why are we working like crazy and not paying ourselves? We wouldn't go be a lawyer and not get paid. We wouldn't go work at McDonald's and not get paid.
Yeah.
So
I can tell you the answer to that.
Ugh.
And there's two things, and it does drive me nuts too. It's the people that figure out how much they think they're worth an hour, and then they price their work according to that. So, you know, if somebody says, well, I'm worth $20 an hour, or my goal is to make $30 an hour, and they price their work according to that, then, you know, they're not going to allow for all the expenses that it takes to actually run a business.
Right.
And they're not really allowing for their time as a business owner.
Yeah, and then they don't give themselves that $30 either.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is the way people price work is usually when they're first in business – is they will try to figure out how little they can sell something for.
Trust me.
And then, you know, instead of, you know, when people ask me, you know, Mark, you know, and Jennifer, I'd love to hear what you think. They'll say, well, how do you price embroidery work? That's easy. I figure out the maximum amount that a customer may ever pay.
Yep.
I add a couple of dollars to that. And then I keep raising the amount until they say no.
Exactly. I paid $35 for one baseball hat. Remember, I'm in this industry. I can get it for cost.
Right.
One baseball hat that had that magic word undisputed on it, because I have a son that is a massive Buckeye. I paid $35 for what amounted to a $1.10 hat.
Right.
Didn't even bat an eye.
Because
my son's birthday was January 19th. The game was over. He needed that hat. It was
cool. Right.
Yeah. And you could only get it one place, and everywhere they had it, it was the exact same price. So I shelled out $35 plus shipping for one hat. And I'm in the hat business.
Right. Yeah. And well, you know what that
my customer won't pay it. I'm like, look at their shoes. Are they wearing a brand name? Guess what? They spent $100 for those. So no, it's not that they're walking around homeless or shoeless or shirtless or foodless. You've decided in your head they won't pay it. And you're wrong, sweetheart. You are so wrong. If they want it, the price is not the sticking point. The price is it going to be exactly what I want? Is it going to look exactly how I picture it? Is it going to be the perfect gift for that friend of mine at their wedding? Or is it going to be what puts my company above my competition visually in my market?
No. But you know what's in their head, Jennifer, is they're thinking, well, you know, I paid $4 for this cap, and there's 18 cents worth of thread. So my cost is $4.18. If I mark it up 100%, I sell this cap for $9. Mm-hmm. I'm making 100%.
Yeah, and they are so not right. They so don't see the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. I think this is the tricky part, because this is really what, because I have, because in the supply side, you know, I always deal with, hey, can I get a better deal on these rhinestones or this ink or something like that? And we would say, well, you know, what, and we have a conversation with them. Well, what's the issue, you know, if you buy in bulk, et cetera? And they said, well, when I buy the rhinestones at this price, I can't make any money. And I do the math.
Wow.
And
that's crazy.
How can you not make money if it only costs you, say, $3 to produce this transfer and the shirt was a couple of dollars? Well, that's only $5. So where is the disconnect? So the problem, this is the tricky part, is that and we all do it. And I think that the answer is not always clear. But you meet them at an HOA meeting and they find out, yeah, I do embroidery all the time.
Right.
I get hats made for my business. We probably get 20 uniforms made a month. Well, fantastic. Nice little customer I can pick up here. Well, how much is it going to be? Well, this is the cost of the shirt. This is the cost of the embroidery. They're going to be, you know, $28 a piece.
Right.
Oh, well, the guy I work with right now does them for 18. I'm not a salesperson. I might not be able to convince this person.
You don't know how to handle objections.
Yeah, how do you handle that objection is one thing. And then the second is that when it's hard to say no, to want to say no when somebody's about to give you business, because you also think about the long goal of that. Well, if I can get them, because we do this in marketing all the time.
Right.
If I can get them now, I might be able to get 4 referrals from that.
Right.
And then, so it's tricky. I don't think that it's always, it's not always easy to just say, well, you just charge $28 for that shirt and people are going to buy it, because people will buy it. But what do you do when the person who says, well, I can buy it now for 18? Oh, well, mine is this name brand. No, that's the brand that they make it for, that they make.
Right.
Well, I'm going to do this work. Look at this quality work. It looks awesome.
I think we should defer to the second generation professional embroidery marketing person here and ask, you know, what do you do, Jennifer? We're sitting here with our arms crossed.
Yeah, we're sitting
What do you do?
Well, first of all, you don't disparage the other decorator. You can mentally curse them blue in your head, but you can't say one thing about them out loud. That's rule number one, is have a little class, people. Come on. We're all on the same team.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Secondly, you know, again, back on my rant, why anybody is selling it for way more less than market value, we need to all grow up and shape up and quit doing that. But in the situation where you're at right there, I would go at it and say, well, I would love to show you what I can do and all the different ways we can make your life easier. If you just had to work with one person for all of your branded logo products, how many hours would you save if you knew you could just make one phone call once in a while and have everything taken care of, one-stop shop? We can get you your embroidered products. We can get you your screen printed products. If you need logoed, you know, other promotional products, you don't ever have to talk to another salesperson. You've got me. I have got your art. You're done in 5 minutes every single time. We guarantee our delivery. We guarantee our quality. I will never miss a deadline.
Right.
How can you afford to not give me a try?
So you're looking for basically like selling on something other than price.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, obviously, if you're at the HOA meeting, as an example, you could say, well, how about if I just bring a box of your shirts to every HOA meeting that we attend?
I cannot tell you how many deliveries I made and how many checks. I mean, it got kind of smarmy feeling at one point because I'd show up with stuff and the guys would be handing me checks. And it was like, meet me out at the car, man, you know?
The DEA is following you around in Northeast Ohio.
Like, really, buddy, it's just shirts.
And you know what? That actually is a sales thing that you bring up, and I think part of the answer is also if they say, well, somebody else will do it for 18. I don't know. You don't necessarily have to have an answer of a combat and pricing back on that, but you just say
something.
What were you gonna say?
Go back with something else. Well, we deliver. We pack individually with the employees' names on them. You know, we'll let you have invoicing where you send out these forms with your pay stubs. We'll pick them up next Friday, and we'll do all the work for you. Your office doesn't have to coordinate the orders anymore.
Yep.
We'll keep your inventory on hand. I'll deliver them to the job site. I had a bump cap, a hard hat, and steel toe boots in my van for years because I would doodle on out right out to the job site. I'd call him and say, where are you at? He'd tell me it was a, gated construction site. Their hospital was being built. You couldn't get in if you didn't have the right equipment. I'd pull out my stuff, show my little thing, and the guy would let me on through. I'd go find him in the middle of this construction job. And nobody else was doing that. I didn't slow him down.
Right.
Well, I think Mark and I are actually thinking the same thing. So I want to test that right now. What do you think was the next thing you were going
to
say?
Well, I mean, I know what I was going to say is I was going to say that sometimes you just have to say no.
Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah. You just got to say it like, hey, $20. Wow. That sounds a great deal. Here's my card anyway. Call me if you ever have an issue.
Yeah. And then you have to and then ask them again at another day.
Right.
And just always be friendly about it. Or just remind them, because what you're waiting for is you're waiting for the falter.
Yes.
Right.
More than likely, if somebody is underpricing their work,
they're going to screw it up.
They're going to screw it up, eventually. And then the other thing is that nobody's perfect forever. You know, they're going to mess up something. And then I think the next tricky part is that if you have a single head embroidery machine and you're by yourself, and you're up against somebody who has 32 heads and is buying their thread directly from the manufacturer and the backing, you know, you're going to have a harder time competing with that. And the only thing that you're going to be able to do is deliver the most personal service possible.
Yeah.
At a price that you can afford to live on that meets with your goals, really.
And that's where your BEL comes back into play, because you're going to have areas that they can't touch. You're going to be small, nimble, agile, able to do that one more piece at the same
price.
That
niche market knowledge. Yeah,
and be able to pull things together that bigger shop is less agile. They can't stop production and throw four more on.
Yeah, and let's just tell it like it is. I mean, there are orders that financially you should say no to, not just because of the price. Maybe it's just because of the size and you don't have a good contract, embroidery house that you work with. I mean, I know people, not in this business, but in others, who've gone out of business because of cash flow.
Well, and if you always operated with loss leader pricing, you're not going to be around very long. So and the customers that say, okay, well, I'll meet that $18. And now you spend the next, 20 hours stitching stuff for this guy at $18 a product, you're actually losing money. You're laying $20 for every hour on the table and handing it to him.
Yeah.
And they don't.
I just want to put in like on the business side that,
you're paying him to do his work.
Yeah. And payment terms are a huge deal.
Oh, man.
Because if you get a new customer and you get an order for 100 garments that you've spent 2 weeks personally embroidering, and even if the profit margin is good, if they don't pay you.
Yeah, if you laid it all out for inventory and didn't get any deposit or credit card or a PO or some way of guaranteeing that contract, every order you should have a piece of paper, your company name, the description of the job, the due date, the price, and two signatures, and the payment method. That defines a legal contract. From whom, to whom, for what, in exchange for money for services, what are the specifics, and a deadline. That's a binding contract in all 50 states.
Man, you know, I'm really disappointed that we've missed that particular thing so far in all of our podcasts.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's, you mentioned something there that's really important, is that is the shared risk in a transaction. In any transaction, there's a level of shared risk. Now, at the grocery store, it's almost none because you're putting it in the cart and giving them money. The risk is you dropping it, you know?
Right.
But when we're talking about a production situation, it reminds me of, I'm dealing with some home improvement projects right now. And I call up a company and about doing a job, and I said, okay, how do we get started? And they said, well, we take 100%, and then we do the job at this date. And that's how we do it. And I wanted to work with them because they were a really good price.
Right.
But I'm not willing to take the risk for that little
5% paying them all up front.
Payment.
Yeah.
And I told them, I said, listen, I said, we're in a shared risk transaction here. I understand that you've got to buy all this stuff and you got to put out your time and money. But at the same time, I don't even know if you'd ever show up. And if you mess up at the end, how am I going to know that? What do I have to hold to say, fix this?
Yeah.
Right.
So I think that this runs true in our business, that there's if somebody wants a job done and they're not willing to give any deposit for it, well, then you need to explain why you require one.
That's an example of business you don't want.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's an example of this. And it's a little more challenging in a corporate world where they're going to want to give you a PO and that's it. No money, you know, and then you just have to make sure that they're credit worthy enough to accept those types of terms, because they might not pay you.
Right.
And that's a risk that you have to take as a business owner. If it's only a piece of paper, they might not pay you. And can I afford to sue them? And if I do, am I ever going to get that money? So there's a lot of risk involved in all these things, and you have to choose when to say yes and no. And you have to evaluate that risk with every transaction, really.
And that's your job as the business owner. And people forget that. It's your job to look after the viability economically for your company. That's kind of the reason you're in the business. And we forget that. We don't even see that as one of the three reasons you're doing it, is to earn money.
Right.
And so I, you know, these folks that I ask, well, how much did you pay yourself this year? And they say, well, nothing. I'm like, then why are you here?
Right. Go get a job.
I mean, if you want money,
if you do that, you may as well get paid for your time.
Yeah. If you want money, then, you know, greeters at Walmart are doing better than you are.
Right. Right.
So,
well, you know, I got to tell you, Jennifer, like, this time has just flown by so far. We're running up into the edge, and I think we've probably got about another 2 hours of things we could talk about.
At least.
About business and marketing and embroidery stuff.
Yeah, we didn't even get into the internet. Ugh.
I know. So let's wrap up this one, and maybe we'll plan to do this again sometime.
I would love it.
Is there anything else that you would like to say about the embroidery business or NNEP before we do our signature sign off here?
Absolutely, the business is continuing to grow. It has not seen a decline in annual sales in the 19 years that I've been in this business. Well, if you count the embroidery years before NNEP, in the 25 years. Even during the economic recession, we still had little league teams that needed uniforms. We still had restaurants that needed, you know, logoed shirts for their staff. We still had hospitals and facilities all over the country that were ordering the same amount of products every day. So it's one of these nifty, magical industries that is relatively immune to the rest of the world's insanities. And there is plenty of room for more. It really is up to you to find your special place in this universe and make it yours and then dominate in that. We're good at helping people find that place. I love learning. We have a member I was talking with yesterday for a while, and she's a former retired air traffic controller. Okay, wow.
Wow, yeah.
You know, talk about one job to another. We we're good at helping businesses get on the right track. That's what we do best. And so if you're interested in that, may I make a plug and give my website?
Absolutely. Please do.
All right. Just go to NNEP.com, which is National Network of Embroidery Professionals. And, you know, there's lots of reasons to join, but the biggest one, again, I had a conversation with a member yesterday. We have a very active online community, a members-only forum.
Mm-hmm.
Her machine needed a part. The machine's 10 years old, but she only uses it for one specific customer because of the nature of the machine. It's a specialized machine.
Okay.
The manufacturer's no longer making the part. She thinks mm-hmm. she has a $10,000 boat anchor now.
Right.
On the members forum, she posted, hey, you know, this is my problem. Does anybody have a solution? It turns out there is a guy who has a back inventory of parts for this kind of machine. He's in the network. He contacted her. She's back up and running today. And the part, which was $900, was $150 less from this guy because of her member discount with him than the company that should have had the part but no longer carries stock. So not only did she find it when she wouldn't have, she saved over $150 on it.
That's awesome. So that's NNEP and Jennifer Cox. Mark, do you have anything that you'd like to say before we sign off here?
No, I think that this was fantastic. And you know, what was one last thing when you said about the growing of the industry,
mm-hmm.
And why there's so much room for each person who already has a business to grow and new ones to come in, is if you randomly are in a group of shops, like a shopping plaza, and you walk into a store, there's a decent chance that they will not be wearing something with their logo embroidered on it. And why aren't they?
Right.
You know, maybe if it's a fashion store and they're selling dresses, but you know, if it's a plumber and he's wearing a shirt or a hat that doesn't have his logo or business name on it, there's room for that
because right.
he's buying a hat anyway.
Yep.
That's right.
Except he's wearing a football or baseball hat instead of his business hat, and it's going to cost him the same amount of money, honestly, to probably get one custom made ones.
Yep.
That's business for you.
And that's why we're all in business. That's
yeah.
why we're in business.
Mm-hmm.
So he could buy
okay, folks.
$5
thanks very much for participating and listening through. Today's Custom Apparel Startups podcast. This has been Mark Stevenson.
Yeah, and this is Mark Viela. And please go to caspodcast.com. Let us know about what you liked about this episode. If you have more questions that we can bring up the next time that we talk to Jennifer, and how many people want to hear from her again. This way we can get excited to do this again and next time bring up some more specific things that had to do either with this one or the future podcasts to come.
Yep, and thanks for being with us, Jennifer. We appreciate it.
Thanks. It was fun.